This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Well, hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 395 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today, we've got some special guests covering quite a controversial topic for record collectors: professional vinyl grading. And for that topic, we have on the show Michael Harwood, as well as Chad and Paul Brayman of VMG, Vintage Media Grading, a company that is attempting to do with vinyl records what has been done in the past to all sorts of collectibles, including sports cards, comic books, video games, and more. And I must admit, this concept of professional vinyl grading does not come easy to me. I mean, for starters, having your vinyl graded and slabbed means the record becomes unplayable. It's locked away in plastic. The way VMG grades these records, then puts the sleeve and vinyl within this tamper-proof plastic case, means that it's no longer able to be played on a daily basis. And the concept of unplayable records will always sit strangely with any record collector. I mean, after all, aren't records supposed to be played and enjoyed? And to me, the answer is yes, and for the vast majority of my personal records, that will remain the case. However, at the same time, I also have several records that are highly collectible that I don't play a lot. I mean, an immediate example is my Beatles Butcher cover. It's never been a great-sounding record. That's a perfect example of a record that could be graded and slabbed. I've also got a USA promo pressing of Stooges Funhouse, or a first tan pressing of Sam Hain Unholy Passion. I mean, these are beautiful records that I can get the music from anytime from a variety of different sources. However, unfortunately, I could also potentially damage these records too. I mean, just sitting on my shelves exposes them to humidity and changes in the weather. So these are the sort of records that I would like to see graded and protected before they just sit on my shelf and decay. I also have personal records that are precious to me. My first copy of the Monkees album, which I got when I was like 3 years old, It's all torn to hell, but it was my first record of my life. It's extremely important to me. It even has my handwriting as a 3 or 4 year old on the record label. That I would like to preserve. Or even my autograph copy. I've got an autograph copy of a Gang of Four LP. It was personalized by Andy Gill just a few months before his passing. These are the sort of records currently sitting on my shelf that could potentially be subject to damage or natural aging. And it seems to me that VMGvinyl.com has a potential solution for that. So, I took some time to get familiar with vintage media grading, which you all can read up on at vmgvinyl.com. And I'm now convinced that this idea has some serious merit. I mean, if you consider other collectibles, a grading service not only helps preserve the item, but helps sustain the market value. You know, Action Comics number one. This is the first comic book to feature Superman. There were over 200,000 of these comic books made, and likely less than 100 copies survive today. Now, the majority of those 100 copies would probably be in much worse condition, or tatters even, if they weren't preserved by a quality comic grading company. And another example is one of the most famous and valuable baseball cards of all time, the 1911 T206 Honus Wagner card. There are only about 50 of these T206 baseball cards out there, and they were likely saved from deteriorating even further, all because of the plastic that protects graded cards. So, doing the same to a few precious records seems like a worthy pursuit, and hopefully today's session will answer some questions as to the process and how to use the services of VMG Vinyl. And by the way, the VMG Vinyl team has made a discount available only to show supporters at patreon.com/vinylguide. Those supporters of our show will get an extra large discount. So head up there now, patreon.com/vinylguide, and get your special discount code. That little code may save enough to be a Patreon supporter all year round. That's patreon.com/vinylguide for an extra special discount at vmgvinyl.com. Alrighty, with the upfronts done, let's get into our conversation with the team at Vintage Media Grading at vmgvinyl.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this week on The Vinyl Guide, we are welcoming to the show, we have three guests actually, Michael Harwood, Chad Brayman, and Paul Brayman, all from VMG Vinyl Grading Services. And this is a very interesting concept that I admit it's taken me a little bit of time to get used to, but it sounds quite exciting. I want to really dig deep into vinyl grading services. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hopefully you'll feel the same way after we get done with this conversation. guys, okay, you guys are a service that grades vinyl, much like a comic book or a baseball card or something like that. Vinyl grading is a very, I don't think I'm stepping out on a limb here. It's a very controversial topic. Tell me about VMG Vinyl. What vinyl grading is tricky. Why is VMG the team to do this?
So I think if you're going to get into this space, number one, you need to be a record collector, and not just a record collector, but a record, the type of record collector who is obsessed over the details, who is interested in all the little idiosyncrasies and all the little nuances of records and really obsessing over getting all the details correct, and, you know, creating collections and appreciating collections. And on top of that, you know, the three of us are record collectors. We're also really, really, really into the collectibles space as well. All three of us grew up collecting everything from baseball cards to records to video games. And we have a long history of getting things graded by third-party authenticators and graders. And I think when you are doing that, when you're sending a lot of things into places like PSA, which is the card grader, or CGC, which is a comic book grader, you start to appreciate the qualities that make a grading company great. And, you know, the reliability, the dependability, the objectivity, the balance of customer service and service to the hobby itself. And so we are dedicated, the three of us, to both of those, both record collecting and, you know, reliably and dependably servicing the hobby itself, you know, with regard to vinyl records as a collectible.
So with grading vinyl records, there seems to be some variations in the scales. You know, we've all heard the stories about people who, you know, I bought something that was near mint off Discogs and it turned up with scuffs on it and that sort of thing. There seems to be kind of subjectivity when it comes to grading records, which I'm sure is present in comic books and cards as well. So when you go about grading a vinyl record, what's the grading scale that you use?
So what we did was we took the Goldmine standard that most graders use, and we adapted that into a 10-point scale, which is kind of common in the professional grading industry. So we took that Goldmine standard, which is not really 10 points, but we turned it into a 10-point scale. And while we wrote the rubric for each one, 1 through 10, we try to take as much subjectivity out of it as possible to make the rubric as objective as we can. And the rubric is published. It's on the website. So everyone can see the rubric. They can see how we come up with our numbers.
Fully transparent, everything like that. Okay.
Yeah. And how you started that question was exactly the reason why we wanted to get into this business, is because, like Mike mentioned, we're collectors first and foremost, right? And we've all had those experiences where you're buying something on Discogs or eBay, and it's, you're not always pleased with the results when you get them. And that's just the nature of the business right now, and a space that we love. And we thought that this is a great complementary to a hobby that's already, you know, buzzing with activity in the marketplace, but with so much uncertainty on the other end. And that's what we're looking to, you know, complement that aspect of it.
Okay, so you guys have everything published. It's out there available. People can review and see it. Now, you say a 10-point system. Is it, when I see comic books, sometimes I see like 7.4 or 5.2. It goes into fractions of a point as well.
Right. Yeah. Our grading scale is on a 0.5 scale. So it's 1 through 10 on every 1/2. And the way we come up with that number is we have 4 subgrades for open albums and 3 subgrades for sealed albums. So for an open album, we'll grade the sleeve, the vinyl itself, the label, and then the spine and seams. And each one of those gets four separate grades. The cover and the vinyl is weighted the most because that's the largest visual piece of a record. And then from those four subgrades, we have a weighted formula that we come out with the 1 through 10 on the nearest one half.
All right. So scale of 1 to 10, there's essentially 20 different potential grades there.
And our thought process there was what we really wanted to do is simplify the market. And when we start splitting hairs between an 8.4 and an 8.3, at the end of the day, it's not going to be that that big of a deal or that apparent as far as the differences. However, the half point scale we thought was the right happy medium to get our message across, where how it adds value to the space, where you know what you're getting. There's a noticeable difference between an 8.5 and an 8 versus 8.6 and 8.5.
Okay.
It's just simplify it.
Yeah.
And I imagine the approach that you're taking in terms of grading vinyl and, you know, the records and the covers is largely inspired / lifted from what other graders do with comic books. And I've seen even video games like encased in plastic, you know. So this is very much the same kind of playbook that they're using, only instead of on those products, it's now on vinyl record.
Yeah, we learned from using those services for the last 10 to 20 years, particularly baseball cards. PSA, which is the number one card grading service, you know, they're very transparent. They're very honest. They have, and their grading rubric is very transparent. And we love the way that they do their rubric. We love the way that WADA and CGC do their rubric. And there's been a lot of companies that have tried other things that kind of fell, you know, to the wayside. And so, you know, we'd like to try to stick with what works.
And just for my understanding, the term rubric, it's the standard. Is that definition of rubric?
Yep. It's basically, if you take a look at the website, you can see 1 through 10 on a 10, it will explain what a 10 looks like. It's basically a flawless album all the way around. In the rubric too, it separates the four aspects, the sleeve, the vinyl, the label, and the spine. So if you look 1 through 10, it kind of has a description of what a 10 looks like on each section, what a 9 looks like at each section. So people don't have to take our word for it. They can see it. They can, right, customers can see the same flaws that we see and kind of how it fits into the rubric.
Quite simply, it's just the criteria for each grade.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's all at the website, vmgvinyl.com. Okay. So walk me through the process. I've got a butcher cover, and to be honest, it's a beautiful cover, but the record doesn't sound great. So I'm happy to get that encased, and I don't need to listen to that particular album. So I want to get this butcher cover graded and slabbed. What do I do?
Okay. So first of all, we'd be super excited to grade a butcher album. So that would be great. The process itself, super simple. Go on to our website, vmgvinyl.com. You have to become a member first. It's free. Create your membership. Then you just click on the Submit Now button. It takes you, it asks a series of questions. It starts with opened or sealed, and then gets into some more detailed questions about the album. Put as much information as you can provide, the more the better. If there's things you don't know, that's no problem. Just simply put NA, move along. Once you fill out all the, you know, the few questions about the album, it'll ask you, do you want to submit another? If not, just click next. If you have another one, go to the next one and ask the same series of questions. Then it just takes you to the next page, which is just like any other e-commerce transaction, your address, billing address, payment information, things of that nature. Hit submit. You'll get a confirmation email with all the details of your submission. We ask you to print that out. There'll be a packing slip in there. Print that, include that with the record, package them up, and send them to the address that's on the confirmation email. As soon as we get the album, you'll get an email from us saying that we received your album. And then throughout each step of the process, once the grading process starts, the authentication process starts, you'll also get notified that it's moving through each step of the process.
Okay. Do I have to provide any information like provenance, or is there a space for me to be able to put some of that sort of, I guess, to
yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So I skimmed over that. Sorry. Within the questions, there's also an area where it asks variant or other information. So in the case of the butcher, you might want to put first, second, or third state. Something like that would be enough information. If we're talking real eclectic things like test pressings, things of that nature, you could put as much information as you can. It's limited in the number of characters. I don't remember off the top of my head in there. Or simply email us, or we'll email you if we have a question. But generally speaking, the majority of the items that people would submit, we think that the questions that are on the website, along with a simple variant information or other information of what makes it, why are you submitting it, would be sufficient.
Have you had experiences with people submitting like bootlegs or unofficial things, anything that you guys would reject from grading?
Yeah, so certainly that is going to be the case. And the issue with bootlegs and the ones that I've received are oftentimes the person sending it doesn't even know. You know, so it's certainly not an issue of someone trying to, you know, cheat the system. And again, that kind of gets into why an authenticating and grading service is important. If when a album is received that is unofficial, is a bootleg, is counterfeit, or simply we can't authenticate it, we're not going to authenticate anything that we are not 100% sure that we are willing to put our stamp on. And that happens with all grading services. It is much more important for us to be sure than it is to take a chance that we were to authenticate something that is inauthentic. And that's kind of also sometimes where the customer steps in as well. We are not unwilling, and in fact, we are very willing to contact the customer to, you know, discuss with the customer where they received a particularly rare album, where it comes from, what knowledge they have of it.
And that's not uncommon in the third-party grading space. So cards, for example, I've gone back and forth with customer service and escalated it up the chain in some cases, you know, many years ago with card third-party gradings about getting a card approved for grading for the first time simply because they've never seen it before, like some soccer cards that are from, you know, outside of the United States that are on their radar, or there's not a lot of information. In that situation, I was the customer and I was providing them, here's why it's legitimate, here is a checklist. And they fact checked me. But not all cases were successful. Sometimes things weren't approved for grading. A lot of times they were. And so I don't want it to seem like we're relying too heavily on the customer to provide information. It is normal, and it is done in other instances with the cream of the crop of card grading, and we're going to apply that same type of service with our customers.
Right. Okay. So I've never had a card graded or a comic graded, so I would imagine there is that, like you say, that process to where they may not recognize all the facts on it that the owner may know about. So. Yeah. Sometimes there's some
sometimes that if you find it. If you find a Picasso in your attic and you send it to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, they're not just going to look at it to authenticate it. They're going to talk to you about its provenance. They're going to, and that's for the super rare things. It's important that we are serving the customer, but we're also serving the hobby. And so we want to get things right, and we are going to overturn every stone possible to get it right.
One thing that I think that makes us so special is we know what we don't know, if that makes any sense. And we're not going to take a chance. If we don't know something, we're going to leverage our network of experts, ask questions until we get definitive answer and not guess. So that's really one of the main points of us as a company.
I imagine some record owners, once they find out about their grading, they may contest that. Oh, I was near mint. Why is this coming back a 6.5? What experience do you have in that? And what is the process? Is there an appeals court for a grading?
So growing up in the 80s and 90s, right, I collected baseball cards, and I had ones that came straight out of the pack and into a screw down case that I thought for sure was mint. I sent those to be graded, you know, years later, and I thought for sure they were perfect condition, packed fresh. They come back 7, 8s. It took me a while. There's a learning curve there to understand that my interpretation of mint was very different from a third party grader. And the point of that is we don't want everything to be a 10, or not that we want, it's we want a 10 to be special. So it really truly needs to meet the criteria in the rubric. So I expect there to be a learning curve. I expect there to be some initial pushback, or folks may think theirs is higher or different grade. If there's something gross and obvious, we'll absolutely have that conversation with the customer. But the whole purpose that we're looking to serve the community is a unbiased, objective grade that is repeatable and consistent throughout, whether I'm grading your album or, you know, somebody from across the globe. It's going to be the same grade and held to the same criteria.
Do you give out many 10s? Are there many 10s out there?
There's not. And that's, I think, something that, you know, is often hard for people to get used to. Most things in the store, I mean, if you just go to your local Target and buy a brand new record, it is rare that a record is perfectly mint. Even just putting it in the wrap often folds the corners. And if it sits sealed for a long time, it can start to bend, you know, in the boxes that is transferred from the factory to the store, there's damage. So it tens are rare.
I'm just looking at this, which I just took out of the box, and it's in very good condition, but it wouldn't be a 10.
There's some creases.
The upper left corner is a little bit dinged, and I'm sure the record's in perfect condition, but it's not perfect. And that's right. And that's what the marketplace, we think, wants. Like, that's why a Gem Mint 10 baseball card Mickey Mantle would sell for, or a high grade Mickey Mantle sells for, you know, 13 million versus a lower grade, which is, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. That doesn't exist right now in the record world, but we certainly think it will in the near future.
Okay.
It's also important to know, and one of the things I had to get used to in the grading world is that the grades are objective and they're specific regardless of where the album comes from. So you might have a record from 1939 that you say, oh, this for a 1939 record, this is in such great shape. I mean, you're not going to see a better shape than this. But in reality, compared to a 2022 Taylor Swift record right off the rack, it's not really in great shape. The Taylor Swift may be a 10, and your greatest, you know, the most perfectly conditioned Frank Sinatra debut album in the world might be a 5. You know, it really might be.
I was just going to say that before, if the comment section starts buzzing off, we know that 1939 is shellac and not vinyl.
Yeah.
Which we don't grade yet, but that's in our plans too.
Well, that's interesting because shellac is also graded on a different scale. It's like E+. I'm not that familiar with it, but I just happen to know that they don't kind of use that same scale. So you right now you guys are doing 12-inch records. Any 7-inch records?
Not yet. Right now we're just grading 12-inch records, but 7-inch and 10-inch vinyl will be coming shortly. We're working. We have the designs. We're just waiting to, you know, go public with that. But right now it's 12 inches.
Because you guys have to design the certain plastic case for it. That's the game right there. Okay. And now with a 12-inch record, double albums, triple albums, what are the boundaries of
that? We kind of showed you an example. We'll know we're on radio, so we'll describe it as best as possible. This is an example of just a single open album.
Right.
This is Alice Chain Starts, a Brazilian copy. And then it's hinged to show the vinyl. So the cover and the vinyl is fully visible, all sides.
Now it folds out like a book, so you can see both sides of the cover and then both sides of the vinyl record in this plastic case.
Yep. And that helps with our grading too, because the customer can see everything we see. Nothing's hidden. Nothing that's graded is inside a sleeve. Everything that's graded is fully viewable. And right. If we were to do a double album, the sleeve would be the same and then it would open again, just like a double album would open that you have. So if you have a double, it would just have, you'll have two vinyls hinged together and everything will be fully visible.
How about things like, there's the Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction. The first press, it came with a little fake tattoo, or inserts that came with a particular punk album. Can those be incorporated as well?
Yes. So something like the Guns N' Roses example. So inserts will be noted on the label. It would say contains the GNR tattoo or sticker. The certain items like Kiss Love Gun, what really drives the value of that album is the Pop Gun insert, which is about the size of the cover itself. If somebody wanted to have that encased and slabbed also and have it hinged along with it, that's an option. So right now we're asking people if that's something they would like, to shoot us an email or put it in the comment section on the order form, and we'll do everything we can to accommodate that when possible.
Okay. The stories of some of these pressings can evolve over time. New facts arise. Even here on the show, talking to artists, they'll tell a story about a record that really kind of changes the value, or maybe makes a second pressing an actual first pressing, that sort of thing. Is there space for a record that's been graded for that story or that particular notability of that pressing to change or be updated?
Absolutely. History is not set in stone, particularly with this, with the grading of these albums and in collectibles in general. New, like you said, new information arises. If we were unaware, or you were unaware, or the hobby itself was unaware of a specific variant, and then that variant becomes well known, or known enough to be accepted as a true variant, long after we had graded and slabbed your album, absolutely, we would take it back, we would reassess it, and, you know, free of charge, we would change the label to reflect the new information.
Okay.
That would not, you know, would not change your grade per se, but it may very well change the information on the album, on our label.
Now, when it comes to records, a lot of times they were pressed at multiple pressing plants around the country or internationally, of course. Is that the same for comic books and cards? I always got the impression that most of those were kind of contained in one or two manufacturing houses. So checking the validity of those and the early pressings would be a little bit more simple than records which are pressed all over the world. Is that fair, or am I mistaken?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay, grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. When it comes to records, a lot of times they were pressed at multiple pressing plants around the country or internationally, of course. Is that the same for comic books and cards? I always got the impression that most of those were kind of contained in one or two manufacturing houses. So checking the validity of those and the early pressings would be a little bit more simple than records, which are pressed all over the world. Is that fair, or am I mistaken?
Yeah, spot on. Yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, one of the barriers to entry to grading and authenticating records has been the complexity of it. It's just a much more complex field than is baseball cards or comic books. And a lot of that has to do with like you said, the pressings. You know, it's interesting with the pressings. Oftentimes you'll see on Discogs, and if you're ever on Discogs, you'll see you have a sealed album in your collection. You want to attach it to something in Discogs, but obviously you don't know the pressing without opening it. And so there is even a limitation. We certainly grade sealed albums, but most likely you're not going to know the pressing if the album is sealed. But that's okay. We won't on our label specify that. You will get on the label whatever is objectively true about the album. But it is true that the Pittman pressing and the Compton pressing may look identical when sealed, and their label to us will be often identical. Sometimes the colors of certain vinyl albums are not known without cracking them open. Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream, you can't tell what the color is until you crack it open. If you have a sealed one, we're not going to be able to tell you what it is either, unfortunately. But we will describe everything that we know on that album, and it'll be slabbed, and you can keep it sealed, and we will describe it. But that information, unfortunately, would be lacking.
Okay, so I've got some records. Well-known Australian band Hard-Ons, they produce some records of different colors. The only way to be able to tell what color the record is the little sticker on the shrink wrap. So you guys would say, okay, well, it's got that green sticker. It must be green. Will you go with that sort of assumption?
Something like that scenario, we would say on the label, sealed green sticker. It would be implied, I think, from the market that the green vinyl's inside, but we wouldn't know for sure,
right?
Simply without opening it and handling it. So we think it'll still serve the same purpose in the marketplace. Like you yourself, very familiar with that band, that certain album. If you see the green sticker, you know it has a green album inside.
Right.
So you would buy it or list it for that price accordingly. What would be prudent for us as a third-party grader would simply state the facts as we know them. And obviously, we wouldn't want to open it or do anything like that. So we would just state the facts as we know them.
Okay. So, for example, a promo copy. White label promo is pretty clear that's a promotional copy, especially if it says promotional, radio only, or whatever. A
right.
Gold stamp on the back of the sleeve talking about a promotion okay. copy, that's probably a fair fact to incorporate. Sometimes the records would have promotional stickers on them, and sometimes those stickers are applied years afterward. So that sounds to me like it wouldn't be considered a fact if it was a removable or a changeable attribute.
It would for us to label it promotional. It would be treated on a case by case basis. And if there's something known about the era of the promo stamp by that certain record label that we could cross reference, and we were confident that the facts checked out, that everything was period correct and looked correct, we would label it as such. If it was something as like a 67 pressing and had a more modern looking sticker, or even something between like 67 and the 70s, the font or the type of sticker that was used, we could verify that and know if something is in the right time period.
Okay.
So that would be, and if something is so extreme or so convoluted we didn't know, we wouldn't grade it. We're not going to guess. So if we can't validate something, and we really expect that those situations are going to be the outlier and few and far between where we don't and can't authenticate something, but it's going to happen, and we will, you know, communicate with the customer. Here's why. If we'll ask for more information, and if we can't verify it, if it doesn't check out, we'll have to send it back to them and say, sorry, at this time, not enough information available. But again, I really think that's going to be an extreme outlier, and there's a lot of information out there, and between ourselves and the network of folks that we could leverage for information, we think that the high majority of the albums that we would receive, we'd be able to validate and label correctly.
Okay. Well, what are some of your sources, your main sources to be able to authenticate a record?
Yeah. So we're developing our own database to track a lot of that. There's a lot of information available online. We know enough to be able to differentiate what is fact and what's really crowdsourced. Some websites are a really good start, where a lot of the information is there and public for them to consume. That's a starting point, and that's where we're starting to develop our database. But we also know that there's a lot of misinformation there as well. So those types of things where we're making those corrections in our own database. And we're also, like I've mentioned before, like leveraging some other experts in the space that we can ask questions, certain genres that, you know, we may not know a lot about, ask those types of questions. And we're constantly updating our own database. So over time, we expect that to really be a crucial piece of our research, where, you know, we can get a matrix code and just do a quick lookup and have most of the information right there.
Okay. So you don't just go to Discogs and say, well, that, it says that, then let's go with that. You guys.
No.
We've started, maybe, but not the end all and be all.
Yeah. Right. I mean, too often I have found just too often that, you know, with my own collection, that Discogs was wrong. So depending on that solely is not it necessarily advisable.
And Discogs is a great service for the marketplace and the community. I use it. My collection's all logged on Discogs, but it's certainly, I wouldn't use it for a research paper. Right. It's like, you know, Mike's a doctor. He wouldn't make a diagnosis off of WebMD. And the same with Discogs. It's a great starting point. There's a lot of facts there, but there's also, it's not 100% certain. So we're certainly not relying solely or really all that much on Discogs.
Mm. Now, when you grade a record, is it play tested?
No, so our grading is just visual. So we don't do any audio grading. It's just a visual grade. And like I said, the rubric has that pretty well articulated.
Okay. So a lot of record collectors don't accept a grade unless it is play tested. What's your response to that?
I would say in our case, once it's graded, it's not being played. So we take the physical aspect of it, and you can tell by the physically, usually if there's, if the actual physical vinyl is damaged, that will affect playback. And that's part of the rubric. If there's scratches that are certain length, certain depths, that's all articulated. Those would obviously create surface noise or skipping, and that's noted. But once the record's encapsulated, it's not going to be played. So the play testing, I don't think is as impactful.
And I would say for the folks that are, if you're a collector of, say, hot stamper records or something like that, then this is not going to appeal to you. And I understand that, appreciate that. And that's fine. We're solely grading the physical attributes of the record and the cover. And that's something that you can make some assumptions or leaps of faith of what the record would sound like based on the grade of the vinyl, because there are subgrades for both the vinyl and the cover. If the vinyl is, you know, high nines, mint, there's pretty high probability, there's a high probability that it's going to sound great. However, if you're a true audiophile and that's, you're looking for the best sounding pressing, then this is, I mean, quite frankly, it's just not for you. And then that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and some of it is also that when you're grading records or you're grading anything, you want transparency, you want reproducibility, and you want to make something that seems so subjective as objective as humanly possible. And I think if you get into grading the sound, there's a lot of there's a lot more subjectivity in that. So for us to have multiple graders all, you know, grading different records, it would be a lot like, in too many cases, it might be a lot like having two different teachers give, you know, a certain grade to somebody, where really the grade may too often depend on the opinion of the grader. And
well, we all have different ears.
We're really trying to create consistency, objectivity, and reliability. And it is just very difficult to do with playtesting.
So you mentioned, Paul, if a person has a hot stamper, this probably isn't the service for them, because a hot stamper, the value of having a hot stamper is being able to play it and to hear the difference when compared to any other pressing. I get that.
Right. Yeah. So our grade is more of the visual appeal of the album and the descriptive nature of the provenance of an album than the actual applicability of the sound.
When they come to your service, when they come to VMG, they get encased in plastic. There's plastic cases that are put around the record. And immediately I'm thinking, oh, what is that plastic doing to my record? Can you talk to me a little bit about that plastic and, you know, whether it puts the record or the shrink wrap or any of that at risk?
So our cases are made entirely out of PETG plastic. And we chose that plastic because of the chemical properties of the plastic are conducive to long-term storage of cardboard and vinyl. The chemical properties of it is that nothing really sticks to it, not even adhesive. So you can't even glue these cases together. That's why you have to use the ultrasonic sealing process. So that's why we chose that. It's just the nature of that type of plastic is that things don't really stick to it.
Okay. So if I have a sealed butcher cover, which I don't, but if I have a sealed butcher cover and it gets put in that plastic, if anyone ever wants to take it out of the plastic, that shrink wrap will be undisturbed. It won't be sticking to anything.
Yeah. Correct. And the case itself also is not pressed super tight on the album. So there's a little bit of breathing room that it's not, you know, squished so tight that it would damage the album long term. There's a little bit of space all the way around the album where it's not really pressed super tight. And then the album, the cases themselves, they're ultrasonically sealed, which means we use an ultrasonic welder that puts a high speed vibration on each seam of the case and kind of melts the plastic together, but it doesn't create heat that would damage any part of the record. So it keeps it tamper proof. So the case itself can be cracked open in a manner that wouldn't damage anything inside of it, but then it just wouldn't be able to be resealed again. So you couldn't, you know, take your VMG 10 10 out of the case and put in a VMG 1 and then ship it off to somebody. The case can't be resealed together.
I've got a lot of records. Most of them I probably wouldn't, you know, I still want to have them able to play and enjoy, but there are a handful of records. And I keep thinking of my butcher cover because it's not a great sounding record to begin with. I mean, the value is just kind of looking at it, gawking at it, and its collectability. And one thing I'm starting to worry about a little bit is it's sitting here with the rest of my records. It could potentially get damaged. I'm very interested in getting it in a plastic case of sorts to be able to protect it. It's an investment. I paid a lot of money for it. It's worth a lot of money, so I need to protect it. So this is the sort of service that I can see totally like checking all those tick boxes there. If I do then take that butcher cover and on-sell it to someone else who wants to play it, they can go through some measures to be able to open it, to play it. The record is still in there, perfectly preserved. they could do that. They take the risk of it, but that is an option. Should
it's not completely unbreakable. It's not completely unbreakable. At the same time, breaking it it's tamper proof in that if you went through the process to carefully break it, you would never be able to reseal it.
Right. It would be obviously opened and tampered with, but there's enough of a border and room around the album where you could, if you ever wanted to crack it out, you could definitely do so without damaging the record with a little bit of care.
Okay. And by the way, this is the same kind of constraints that a comic book would have or video games that get graded. You know, if the purchaser wants to bust it open for some reason, then that's the right of the buyer. So the plastic doesn't affect autographs on a record cover. You could make room for things like backstage passes. If someone bought a record and got it autographed with a backstage pass, those sort of things can be incorporated into the design.
That particular example would be, we don't accommodate that right now. We would, if something is factory autographed or factory included with the album, we will happily encase it, slab it, and have whatever visible that makes sense as far as factory inserts. Additional things like memorabilia, ticket stub, things like that, that's not something that we would accommodate simply because it would be the objective here is to be standardized and consistent, not just a framing company. So that's not something, I hate to say no, but in that situation, it's just something that it doesn't make sense and would not align with our overall objectives of what we really want to bring to the hobby.
I get that. You got to have boundaries. And if it hasn't happened yet, I'm sure it will happen someday soon. If you receive something like an acetate or something, a Rolling Stones record that was printed in 1960s Malaysia, is VMG able to handle those sort of things?
So currently we won't grade an acetate just because the one-on-one type of items we currently aren't grading for acetates.
Yeah, so I think if there's a super rare album that is vinyl, then what we're going to do is we're going to turn over every stone we can to try to authenticate it. We are going to, look at the prominence of it, much like a test pressing.
There you go.
We would need some documentation or research to put in to validate that, make sure it's authentic.
Right.
Okay. All right. International customers, right? You guys are based out of the US. Is there anything different for those of us that are coming from outside North America?
So really the only difference is the cost to ship, return shipping. And right now our website, we don't have international shipping available. However, the process would be the exact same. And if you're interested and you're outside of the United States, please just shoot us an email. We'll figure out some sort of what the return shipping would cost. Communicate that prior to submitting. If it's something that works for you, great. And just follow the process the same way you would as a domestic customer. But really, right now, the only prohibitive thing is we don't have an automatic shipping calculation to ship all over the globe right now. So that's something we expect to roll out in the near term. But for now, bear with us, shoot us an email, and we'd be happy to accommodate.
Okay. Now, you guys seem like very trustworthy guys to me. However, if someone is going to be shipping you their holy grail, what are some of the best practices that they could take to ensure that that record comes back to them? I'm not saying you guys would run off with the record. I'm saying shipping, things can happen when someone releases that record out into the wild and before it comes back. What are some of the best practices you'd recommend those of us take?
In the shipping process, the first thing you want to do is you want to obviously pack it in such a way that it's not going to be damaged in the box. Pack it with enough padding and enough space, often with a mailer inside a bigger box that is padded so that as it jostles around, it isn't damaged. We very much recommend you insure your shipping before you send it to us. when you submit your items to us, we do ask that you give us an estimate as to the declared value of your item, and then we will insure it for that on the way back. So it will be insured
in transit.
One thing I would mention is that in the US, we have something called media mail, and media mail is a way to send things like books, but also records can be sent via media mail, and it's much cheaper. It's slower, but it's an attractive option for people who want to send records. However, we would recommend against it simply because when you send something media mail, it actually, the Postal Service reserves the right to open up to ensure that what you're sending is actually a book or a record. And that's a risk that we don't think is particularly wise to take. So we would in the US recommend against sending things media mail.
And when the packages come to your office, how are they treated? Like, how do they go through that chain, through that process? Where are they stored? How are they handled when they're in your possession?
So it comes to us. We open up the box. We make sure that everything listed on the packing slip is also in the box and that everything matches. Things are then placed in a special room with special shelving to keep everybody's orders separately.
That room is segregated, locked with no natural light. Perfect for, you know, properly stored, how I would want to store my valuable records long term. That's the type of room or environment that they would be stored in.
And then they are handled extremely carefully. We handle them with white gloves, and we only handle them as much as is necessary. We inspect them with a magnifying glass and special LED lights. After that, they are placed in a queue to be sealed and a label made. They're sealed and they're sent off. And when it is in our possession, we are insured. So if something, God forbid, were to happen, a lightning strike or some other act of God, your declared value would be fully covered.
Now, slabbing and graying, I get it. It can take some time. There's different, it seems like on the website, there's a few different options. You can get them turned around faster or slower, that sort of thing. One option is to have it for 60 days. Is that kind of a standard industry timing? Like if I sent a baseball card or a comic book to the graders there, 60 days, to me, it seems like a long period of time to have my most prize records out of my hands. But, you know, is that kind of standard for the process?
Yeah, believe it or not. I mean, and this has been a bit of an issue with grading. We sent some baseball cards into the leading third-party grader, and it took a year and a half to get them back, actually, during the pandemic. I've sent some video games in that have taken over a year. We've sent some comic books and magazines in that have taken many months. We don't expect that your submission is going to take 60 days. However, the reason we have started out with that 60-day option is we also realize that sometimes it is going to take research and it's going to take work on our part to figure out, you know, whether with you or with our own research methods, to figure out the authenticity and the identity of your album. And so we don't want that to be a rushed process. I think in general, one would expect to get their album much sooner than 60 days, but we put 60 days out there because in the grading community, that has kind of been the standard. And so it gives us time to make sure we have all our ducks in a row, T's crossed, okay. I's dotted.
And the reason you make an account at vmgvinyl.com, that's so you could actually track the order. So it's not like it's a complete vacuum of information for those 60 days. You could actually see periodic updates in there.
Right now we're doing manual updates, but yes, that should be, we have an automated update system that should be ready to go very shortly under your account page.
Okay. But in the meantime, there's manual updates.
We'll be sending you your updates regularly by email.
We received the record. We're in the process of doing it. 2 weeks later. Okay. Here's where we're at in the process. Yeah. So, okay.
But our goal and our very short-term goal is to have that be an automated process. Yeah. That you can easily see in your account page.
What to set the expectation, what the customer communication from VMG, whether it's either on the submission page or via email, would be: one, we received your order. That's the confirmation email you get automatically right away. The next would be we received your items. Then once that it wouldn't be, you won't hear again until we actually get to your order and start the authentication process, your items being authenticated, create the label or spec of what it is. Then again, the next step would then be integrating, encapsulating, quality check, final shipping. So those are kind of the steps that to expect that what you would receive in terms of communication. And you start to get excited when it's in quality check, meaning it's going to be shipped out very shortly. I do that right now with other collectibles and in cards. I follow it probably way more than I should and refresh it and see how soon, even though it's been many months. And there's a little bit, you get those endorphins going when you see it's in stage 7 of 8 or 6 of 7. So that's the similar model, and that's what to expect as a customer.
You know, again, I got a couple thousand records, and I can think of about maybe half a dozen or so that I'd like to see encased for and preserved for posterity. And like you just said, the very first copy of Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, I got when I was 4 years old. I'd like to have that encased. My Beat to Hell copy of the Monkees that I have. I mean, I swear to God, if I send it in for grading, it'll come back as a 0.0. It is so beat up. But that record is so precious to me. It started the engine on this whole record and music thing when I was a kid. So to me, that is the value of that is to me is priceless, and I'd love to see it preserved. Inside, you know, records that I'm storing here that I don't play that often, I also want to protect it from damage. So some of those records, yeah, I think I could definitely see a purpose for this grading services on, but also just the collectability. There are some records that, you know, are so damn valuable, you know, and I didn't mean them to be, or I didn't think they would get to this sort of dollar amount. I got to protect them. And so, you know, that's what I'm thinking, Butcher Cover or some of my punk records, the one-offs that I need to preserve and protect.
Exactly. And that's exactly where our mindset is like we've been saying throughout the interview is, you know, we're collectors first and foremost, and we love vinyl. We love other collectibles too. And we really thought that there was a void in the space and it was needed. And we thought, you know, there's no better, you know, three people that we think of to fill that void that, you know, with our own experiences in both in vinyl and in other collectibles and experience with third-party graders to launch this. And the situations or the examples that you gave, I mean, that's cool. That's exactly what we want. It's not just the high value albums, but it's the ones that are, you know, have some sentimental value too. And then everything in between. And I really believe that third-party grading is going to be a catalyst for the whole record space to really, it's the one area that hasn't seen the type of exponential growth post-COVID as far as like just prices, that I really think that this could be the catalyst where that Butcher album you have, which is, you know, tens of thousands of dollars today, is a six-figure, $1 million album down the road. Truly.
Well, personally, I hope that's the case. But look, yeah, because when I first heard about vinyl grading services, my initial reaction was, what? You know, records should be played. You know, that's kind of that default kind of line that keeps running through my head. But actually, you know, there's also a lot of vinyl that needs to be preserved and needs to be protected. And the high-end stuff that's traded, I think, goes very hand-in-hand with that. It's not like the music is completely scarce. You're not locking away music. If I send in this Beatles Butcher cover, it's not like I can't get that music anywhere else. It's just that particular unit that is exceptionally precious and high value is now protected for me. It's a protected asset. And the fact that it's being done in so many other industries, baseball cards, comic books, video games, wine, you know, there's a lot of collectors out there that collect things that can't be consumed, that can't be enjoyed, like, you know, wine or, you know, the very first Mario Brothers game that's in plastic, you know, but it's not like you can't go out and play that game somewhere else. So it took me a while to get over that hump of seeing this as seeing the place that this vinyl grading services fits in. And I'm excited about it. So I'm going to be sending you guys some stuff. I think my butcher cover is certainly going to be one of them. But yeah, I'd like to see some of these things in plastic and protected and leveraging your service for storing them for the future. So guys, Michael, Chad, Paul, thank you very much for joining us here and being grilled again, getting through my questions and skepticism. But I really think there's a value. There's a space that VMG Vinyl Grading Services plays. People can check it out at vmgvinyl.com. I think the first step is you got to set up an account and then you can go from there. But again, guys, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide and good luck with your service.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, that was interesting. You know what? I'm rolling the dice. I got a little package together I'm sending over. I'm going to get some stuff slabbed and graded and preserved, and I'm in. Let's check it out. And again, if you guys want any special services, it's vmgvinyl.com. If you're a Patreon supporter, patreon.com/vinylguide. There's an extra large discount up there. Log into the Patreon page and you can grab that and get yourself a nice discount at vmgvinyl.com. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Share them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter, post them in the Reddit forums or Facebook groups, or even show your record nerd friends how to get The Vinyl Guide podcast on that smartphone of theirs. They'll appreciate it, and so will we. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.